live and local,
across the city
and South Cambridgeshire.
This is Lee Chambers.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
There we are, David Bowie, of course, and Life on Mars. What else could I play? Fading away beautifully there. Comes back for a little bit. What else could I play when I'm about to speak to Professor Nicholas Tosco, who I hope is on the line. Nick, are you there?
I am there. Thanks very much. What a fantastic track. Nothing could be more appropriate.
No, and I'm sorry, you've probably heard that track multiple times over the last week or so.
Yeah, I never get tired of it, though. I'm a big Bowie fan.
Well, thank you so much, Nick, for making time to talk to us here at Cambridge 105 Radio. I'm guessing that you have been uber busy in the last week or so. This has really captured the imagination of the world, hasn't it? The Mars landing, the Perseverance landing on Mars.
Absolutely, it has. I mean, one of the great things about it, it's received so much press attention, which has been fantastic, but the decision to attach a series of cameras and videos to the landing apparatus to actually video the landing has been astonishing. The whole world has been able to view this with a front row seat. It's just been tremendous.
Were you watching it as it landed on Mars?
I was, yeah. I was watching it with my wife and five-year-old son. We had NASA TV on in the background, which gave us the live feed, but we were also connected to the rest of the science team through a sort of a virtual gathering party. So it was, of course, emotional.
And nerve-wracking as well, I would imagine.
That's right. Yeah, there were a couple of minutes there where those thoughts creep in, you know, where you kind of hear yourself saying, well, what if it doesn't make it? I really hope it makes it.
Well, we're going to talk about what it's going to be doing up there when it's there. But let's take a moment, really, just to appreciate. This is an amazing achievement, isn't it? Billions of miles travelled, months of travelling. This as sending back images to Earth from Mars. What a fantastic achievement.
Absolutely. I mean, it felt amazing to be part of this. I mean, the Mars 2020 mission involved thousands of people to get the rover to Mars. And the fact that NASA and JPL managed to do this in the face of a global pandemic has been just a huge victory. I mean, my wife and son and I watched the launch, and just getting it off the landing pad, it just felt like it was really going to happen, and the landing just made it all the more real. And this mission, as you may know, is the first crucial step in bringing samples back from Mars so we can study them. So it's really humbling to be part of such a historic project. And there's also a sense of responsibility and obligation to the general public and to future generations of scientists that we select the right samples and do justice to this amazing opportunity.
Well, let's find out how you are involved, Nick. But I suppose, first of all, your Department of Earth Sciences and you're involved in geosciences. I suppose, first of all, what are those two things, earth sciences and geosciences?
Yeah, so they often get a little bit mixed up. I mean, I prefer to use the word earth sciences, although geosciences to me essentially means the same thing. But the earth sciences encompass the physics, chemistry, biology, and mathematics of the earth. And so as earth scientists, our goal is to understand how the earth system behaves now, how it's behaved in the past, and how it will behave in the future. And of course, you know, that last point, understanding how the Earth system will behave in the future, is a really pressing question to society. And so we get at this question in a number of different ways. But one of the ways we can get at this is the science of geology, which is understanding what the Earth has done in the past. And that's really where this mission starts. It's at its root a geological mission. The rover is landing in, you know, sedimentary deposits that were formed billions of years ago when the planet was very young, when Mars and Earth were very young. And so we want to analyze these rocks and really unravel what has happened there and what that tells us about the possibility for life on Mars and also about our own origin.
So is that your involvement, Nick? You're analyzing these rocks. Can you do that while Perseverance is there, or do you have to wait for the rocks to be brought back?
Yes to both. So my involvement is as a member of the science team. And so the science team is an international collection of scientists charged with the responsibility of deciding where to go, what to do, and what to sample, and how to piece together the origin and history of the landing site. So we need to find an environment that would have been suitable for ancient life. And so we'll do that by sending a to-do list effectively to the rover to conduct a series of analyses. And those data will be sent right back to us, and we'll be analyzing the data in real time. And we'll try to react to those data and slowly piece together a story and some hypotheses that can be tested.
And how long does it take for data to come from Mars to Earth to you on Earth?
It happens on roughly a daily cycle. So commands are essentially sent to the rover in the morning on Mars time, that is. The rover will complete most of those things and send the data and acknowledgments and verifications that they've been completed. And that'll be sent back to Earth in the afternoon Mars time. Now, I refer to Mars time as almost like another time zone. The slightly annoying thing about Mars time is that that the length of day on Mars is about 40 minutes longer than it is on Earth. And that's annoying in the sense that if we want to keep up with the daily cycle on Mars, we have to continuously change the times in which we operate by 40 minutes each day. And so the meeting times just cycle around the clock on Earth time. And it's basically like living with perpetual jet lag.
And I know you're waiting for the rocks to come back so you can analyze them. So you don't want to jump ahead too much. But there does seem to be an expectation that we will find some signs of previous life on the planet.
Yeah, that's right. So as I mentioned, this is the first step towards returning samples from Mars. And what this mission will do is we'll select the samples. We'll take a number of drill cores about the size of a pencil, store those in the belly of the rover, and then at certain locations near the landing site, we'll deposit those and leave those at the surface. And then another mission will be launched in a couple of years' time that will collect those samples and send them off into orbit around Mars. And then a third mission will rendezvous with that orbiting sample carrier and loop around the planet and head back to Earth. So this is a process that will take roughly 10 years, or at least that's the schedule now. Whether or not I will get to analyze the samples, we don't know. That's a process that will be determined by an open and transparent process that will be a call to the entire scientific community.
My goodness, that is a long process, isn't it? You have to be patient.
Yes.
And the signs of life that you are expecting to find, if you do, I mean, these aren't going to be little green men, are they? These will be sort of microbes, tiny, tiny things.
That's right. We use the word life and for you and I, when we think of life, we think of human beings, we think of plants and animals, and humans and plants and animals are a form of life that we refer to as complex life. The way our cells are built is the process of billions of years of biological evolution. But for a long time on Earth, for the earliest portions of the Earth, life was dominated by, as you say, microbes. And they're far simpler. And so everything that we think we know about the origins of life on Earth and the possibility that life may have gotten started on Mars leads us to suspect that if we're talking about life, we're almost certainly referring to microbial life. And so what would we find? It's difficult to say because, as you know, extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. And I think we have to be honest that the rover itself probably won't find unambiguous evidence of previous life on Mars. And that's the reason why we need to select the right samples, the samples we think have the highest probability for recording evidence of life, and get them back to Earth so we can use all of the facilities and laboratories available to us to really know for certain whether or not life was there.
And playing devil's advocate, why is this important? I mean, people might say, look, we've got so much going on this planet at the moment, climate change, pandemics. Why are we interested? Why should we be interested in what once went on Mars?
Yeah. So in my mind, it relates to one of the biggest scientific questions that humankind has been asking since our own origins, and that's the origins of life on Earth. So it's important to understand that that this has been an incredibly challenging scientific question, and humans have been working on this for a very, very long time. But in the last 20 years, there's been a revolution of our understanding of how life may have gotten started on the Earth. Chemists, for example, are experiencing a revolution in understanding how the building blocks of life can be made in the laboratory, how you can go from basic chemicals to get to the key biomolecules that run cells. And so this gives us important information about the chemical conditions that needed to have been met in order for life to have gotten started. The problem is that we don't really know how they were met on the early Earth, because we have no record of what happened on the early Earth. Plate tectonics has destroyed most of our ancient rocks, and so we can't know. We can only use theory. And that's where Mars comes in. Mars has a geological record that is so old, it's about, it ranges from 3 to about 4.5 billion years old, or at least the rocks we're going to be looking at, that is right within the window which Earth, or life we think got started on the Earth. And these environments are exceptionally well preserved, and it provides a record of ancient environments that really exists nowhere else in the solar system. So it's an opportunity to make observations and understand how the environment played into the story.
And I know you say that those rocks won't come back for another 10 years or so. I bet you're desperate to get your hands on them. But when will we start to hear any kind of news or breakthroughs or new findings?
So almost continuously, the mission has a very strong policy of transparency. You'll notice that all of the raw images that are taken by the rover are posted every day. And you know, that's because NASA recognizes that the general public has invested in this mission, and they deserve to be handed the raw data, but then also the information that the science team has synthesized. And so when the science team reaches a point where we're more or less in agreement about certain aspects of what we're finding, we'll call a press conference and alert the public. And so this mission will probably be running for a few years, maybe 3 to 4 years or so. And I suspect there are going to be many, many press conferences with a lot of amazing science and exciting discoveries that are relayed to the public as soon as possible.
This is exciting. And your Department of Earth Sciences at the University of Cambridge, where are you at the moment, Nick? Are you in Cambridge?
I am. I'm at my home, like most folks, you know, balancing homeschooling and the rest of the pandemic.
Well, thank you so much for talking to us. We'll try and check in with you at some point, hopefully in the future. We do appreciate your time. At NASA Perseverance has on Twitter has almost 2.5 million followers. So this is something that really has captured the imagination. Thank you so much for your time, Nick.
No problem. It's my pleasure.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Have a good day.